Welcome, everyone, to Making a Difference. This is John Ernst, your host, as always. I'm here with Mike Salmon helping me out again today. Hey, Mike.
Hey there, John. How are you?
We're doing good. Again, we're here trying to talk to friends about their businesses and what they're seeing in their community. Today, we have two guests, Jim Lester. Jim and I go back a long way. I believe he was the Boy Scout leader to my brother back in the day when my brother got his Eagle Scout. How are you doing today, Jim?
I am doing just fine.
And also, we have Mike Fulton from Keyworth Bank. How are you doing today, Mike?
Doing well, thank you.
We're here, you know, like I said, Jim and I go back a long way. And Mike and I just met today. We want to, you know, talk about what we're seeing kind of in investments and in real estate and the banking industry and how the two can combine. But first, I'll go start off with the Jim. Jim, you call yourself a neighborhood renovator. What does that mean?
Well, we started out buying individual properties all over town, and we realized that we were exposing ourselves to a lot of bad things that other people did that we couldn't do anything about. So we started focusing on about three farms, as we call them, where we are slowly buying out entire neighborhoods. These are very low-income, very depressed neighborhoods. Focusing on a few neighborhoods as opposed to all over town allows us to essentially create an apartment complex within a neighborhood. We now own 40 out of 140 houses in one neighborhood and 40 out of about 80 in another neighborhood. So when anything comes on the market, we immediately snap it up. By doing this, we can also control the maintenance of the neighborhood because we can spread the costs of over 40 investors or 40 property owners so that we can go in and when the neighborhood needs to be cleaned up, we can fund a neighborhood cleanup, as we will be doing in Northwest Atlanta in May.
Now, you're not a flipper. You don't.
I think I've only sold one house that I've ever bought. I'm a collector.
And what is your average price you're buying these houses for?
Well, most people think that I'm lying, but our average purchase price for the last 2 years has been right at $10,000.
What was your lowest purchase price?
Lowest purchase price was $5,200. I think it was a house that I bought with you.
Oh, that is correct. That was the house. What was the second lowest?
Second lowest was $6,500, which is another house I bought with you.
That is correct. So there we go. So like I said, Jim and I go back a long ways, and we have done some business with each other.
I'm finding a theme here.
Yes.
Now, your company is called Uncommon Properties. How did you get into this business? What got you to where you are today?
Well, I've always loved real estate because of early on the leverage aspect of it. I was always a high-tech sales rep. I sold ERP systems and then internet systems. Internet security, designed a variety of things for major corporations. But every time I'd get a big paycheck, I would go buy another piece of real estate. And one day I realized that I no longer had to tattoo my rear end to an airline seat 3 nights a week or 6 times a week to make a living. I could just do it in real estate. And that is when I stepped off of the high-tech treadmill.
I understand from my notes here that most of your tenants are Section 8. I guess the notion is, or the popular notion is, that those are people that come in, they might tear up the house and so forth when they're there. What's your experience been working with Section 8 folks?
Section 8 folks are so diverse that you have a completely normal distribution of the population. Some of my Section 8 tenants, I would be honored if they invited me over for Thanksgiving dinner.
And Jim, for those that are not familiar with Section 8, kind of explain what that means.
Section 8 is, the official term is housing choice. It is Section 8 of some HUD law by which the federal government funds local housing authorities, which are created by a local political subdivision. In this case, the city of Atlanta creates the Atlanta Housing Authority. They subsidize the rent of people who do not want to live in housing projects. Now, in the city of Atlanta, Renee Glover has made quite a name for her. Renee is the director of the Atlanta Housing Authority by shutting down about 95% of the housing projects. So if someone is going to receive public aid, they are going to live in a mixed income neighborhood. And Ms. Glover has done a marvelous job in a number of localities around Atlanta creating vibrant mixed income neighborhoods where you'll have subsidized apartments, you will have mixed income homes, and then companies like Brock Built will come in and build 200 or 300 high-end townhomes. And when I say high-end townhomes, I'm talking a average sales price of, say, $350,000. So you're intermixing people who know how to get up in the morning, go to work, with people who, frankly, need for their children to see other people, see daddies and mamas getting up and going to work in the morning. So it's a very effective strategy for everyone.
And the other misconception about Section 8 is dealing with the people at Section 8, with the Atlanta Housing Authority, and the headaches that occur with them.
Well, Atlanta Housing Authority, bless their hearts, has to follow a HUD rule book, which is several hundred pages long. So you can shoot the messenger if you want, but for the most part, they are able and capable people who are doing a very good job of administering a federal program.
Now, when you rehab a house, you say fix and forget. What does that mean?
Well, this drives many new investors crazy, because when we buy a house, and one of the reasons why we buy houses for $5,000 and up, average price of $10,000, is we're not buying the prettiest house on the street. As a matter of fact, the only house that I have currently that I wish I did not have was just drop-dead gorgeous when I bought it. I thought it was beautiful. To use the metaphor, it was beautiful with cancer. Everything about this house underneath the paint was rotten. I had to basically tear the house down to the floor joists. Most of the studs were gone, and so I had to re-wall, re-roof, re-sheetrock and do the entire house, and I had paid a premium for it because it was so pretty. So now I buy the ugliest house on the block. If it has all the windows are broken out, if there's a hole in the roof, I say great, because I can fix it up so that I'm not going to have to touch it for 10 years. In other words, you fix it the first time and then you just collect the rents. If you have a nice house, they rent instantly. My average time on the market from the time that I put the for rent sign on the internet in front of the house is, I would say, 3 to 5 weeks. It takes Atlanta Housing probably another 4 weeks to get out, approve the application, and approve the house and move the tenant in. And then a tenant will typically stay in 3 to 5 years.
How do you find the homes that you're looking to buy?
We buy them on the courthouse steps. We buy a lot of them just off of the multiple listing service.
Do you, and I guess, do you work with banks to get loans to buy all these homes? Because you're not selling the homes. You are collecting some rent, but you're not selling the homes. So you just sometimes don't have a ton of money at one time.
We raise money from investors.
Okay.
We are able to pay investors a guaranteed, and let me explain guaranteed. The guarantee is based on rent coming in. But if you are an investor in one of our houses, we will pay you a minimum of 6% quarterly as long as the house is rented. At the end of the year, we then distribute the profits to everyone on a pro rata share. And typically, my average partnership right now is paying about 14%, which certainly beats a savings passbook account at anybody except Keyworth, which I'm sure Keyworth has a much higher rate.
Absolutely.
Is this? I've never heard of anything like this. Is this something unique, or is this pretty common?
I have no idea whether it's common or unique. It works for me, and I don't have any problem finding investors who want to make a virtually guaranteed 6% return with an upside of twice that.
I'm just curious, Mike Fulton's with Keyworth Bank, and he does a lot of loans. Have you ever heard of anything like this? Have you come across anything like this?
I have. I have several opportunities over the last couple of years where people will come in, but I have not heard at the prices that you're talking about. It's usually in the 20 to 30 thousand range, and then they might need additional funds for improvements to the house. But it's mostly flippers. It's people that want to buy these homes and turn around and sell them for a profit.
No, that's the difference with Jim and I. Like I said, I've said before, you know, I invested with Jim and we've partnershiped. Is that there's no loans on any of these properties as of yet. We buy these in cash. We fund it completely on our own, and so that we don't. If the rent doesn't come in for a month on a few properties, we're not all scared about the boogeyman bank. Of course, not Keyworth Bank.
Careful.
Of course not. But about the unscrupulous loan off. I mean, coming in and taking foreclosing on those properties and stuff. We're a lot of stress free.
Wow.
Now, you say you want to work with investors, not real estate investors.
Well, I guess once a week I get a call from some real estate investor who wants me to find them the deal of the century. And I just am honest with them. I say, if you can find the deal of the century, I don't expect you to send it to me, and I'm not going to send it to you. I have several friends who own Homevestor franchises and that sort of thing. We're great friends, but we don't do any business together because we're all out looking for the same thing, finding a great deal. I take an equity position in all the properties, and so what I'm doing is working with largely doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, and successful small businessmen who want to put some of their money to work in real estate. If somebody is a full-time real estate investor, they don't need me. They don't want me.
Now, what's your exit strategies for these investments? For usually, we've talked a lot about Lincoln Homes, which is the main area in Northwest Atlanta that you and I have gone in together with. What's those exit strategies for those?
Well, then all of the neighborhoods that we have farms in are surrounded by much higher income homes. They are all depressed because of historic crime, historic low income. Just it is the way it is. As long as the economy limps on, nothing is really going to change on that, and we just continue to accumulate. But we don't believe our neighborhoods are any different from Kirkwood or South Decatur or any other in-town neighborhood, Old Fourth Ward. The neighborhoods we are in are very geographically desirable. It's easy to get to 285. It's easy to get to Midtown. It's easy to get to downtown or the airport or even the Galleria in Cobb County. So it's a very geographically desirable neighborhood, just the neighbors are not what you would call upscale. And all of this, the exit strategy is dependent on two things. One is the economy improving. Second is gas prices rising. Gas prices rising are something I love because it drives people in from Woodstock back to closer in. And the third thing is, in all of these neighborhoods, Atlanta Housing holds dozens, if not hundreds, of acres of property, which they have all torn down their apartment complexes and are just holding on, waiting for the recovery. When AHA partners with someone, comes in and redevelops these neighborhoods as mixed income, then, as they say, a rising tide floats all boats, and all 40 of our properties will then start floating upward.
And we've seen a big change in the neighborhood since you and Uncommon have come in and started really making these houses look nice from the outside due to, trying to make sure we get the proper tenants in there. Have you seen the neighborhood itself already kind of turning over from when you first started?
Absolutely. There are so many people in the neighborhood who are delighted for what we're doing. I just had an experience last Saturday where I was looking for a particular person in the neighborhood, and I asked this elderly woman, when I say elderly, she's probably 70 years old, where a gentleman was, and she said, "Would that be junior or senior?" And I said, "Gentleman should be about 40. She said, "Oh, that would be my son. May I ask who you are?" And I said, "I'm Jim Lester." And she said, you're Mr. Jim. Can I hug you? I really want to thank you for all you've done for improving the neighborhood. So that makes it worthwhile.
It does. It. Wow.
Now, I was going to ask you, Jim, when you have these prospective tenants, how do you pre-approve them, if you will? I mean, is there an application process? Do you go as far as pulling credit? Do they have to take a class of some sort, a financial class, to help qualify?
That would be up to AHA. I have an application. I check applications. If somebody wants to lie, they can lie, and they will always get somebody to vouch for their lies. My philosophy on tenants is the same thing that it should be for most successful companies. You look at a tenant as an employee, and most successful companies will say, if you make a bad hire, fire them fast. So if I get a bad tenant in there, then I terminate the lease immediately and go through the dispossessory process because, as my mama said when I was growing up, people don't change.
No, I filed a few of those dispossessories for you, Jim, and we were talking recently about how that you're different than a lot of other Section 8 landlords who don't do that. You don't dispossess the clients go ahead.
Well, I think what you're referring to is on Section 8, let's say that the rent is $800 a month. Atlanta Housing may pay $600 and the tenant pay $200. A lot of the tenants believe that I would sub-optimize, as my decision sciences professor so famously drilled into my head, that I would sub-optimize and just take the $600 and be happy. The problem with that is it's a mindset, and it sends a message to them that if they don't have to pay the rent, they don't have to pay the utilities. If they don't have to pay the utilities, they're not going to take care of the house. If they don't take care of the house, then it's all going to come falling down back on my head. So if they're not going to follow the rules, if they're not going to do what they say they'll do, then they need to find someplace else to live.
And a lot of other Section 8 landlords would just rather take the $600 and just move out their day.
That's what I'm told, but I really can't speak for anyone else.
Real quick, Jim, how you started with your first house. You always start with number one, and you're up to how many homes now?
About 110.
Wow, that's an amazing story. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Where do you see yourself in maybe 5 years? Where do you see Uncommon Properties in 5 years?
170. People say, what is your exit strategy? And I said, this is about as much fun as I've ever had in my life. I don't need an exit strategy.
Well, and you are making a difference. Like you had that one story of the person thanking you for, helping them out with their son. I mean, that's incredible right there. So,
well, thank you very
much. Great story.
Jim, for people, who listen to this and want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Easiest way is just drop me an email, jim@jimlester.com.
Well, thanks again, Jim. Thanks for coming on out.
Thank you.
Now, we're here to talk to Mike Fulton from Keyworth Bank. And Keyworth is a relatively new bank in the Gwinnett County area. Mike, when did Keyworth start up?
Keyworth Bank started. We came together as a group in 2007 to open the bank, and we have grown to 4 locations now. We're primarily in the North Metro Atlanta area, Gwinnett County, which is my office right here in Duluth. Across the street from the arena, we have a location in Johns Creek, as well a second location in Johns Creek that used to be Alpharetta off of Hainsbridge Road. A fourth office, which is not yet a full-service office, but it's a loan production office, is in Cobb County. So we've done very well and grown to about $350 million in assets over the last 5 years, and we couldn't be more grateful for the success that we've had.
Well, obviously, the last 5 years, in 2007, you're coming on board. Keyworth is coming to fruition right at the time, right near the peak and about before the crash happens. I mean, I believe it's mid-2007 when the real estate stuff started, really bubbling to a good boil there.
No question. It was definitely a tenuous time and a time of change in the industry. And, we came gunslinging out there, raised all this capital to go in and open the doors, and then all of a sudden we start hearing you know, about the real estate market and what's happening. And so we had to pull back a little bit. And then you start hearing about some other banks that are potentially in trouble. So definitely it was an interesting time. But when you look back and you think back 5 years ago, it actually turned out to be a blessing for us because, you know, we started the bank and we had a clean balance sheet, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that a lot of my peers and a lot of my friends in the industry were with banks that, you know, were constrained because of their lending, because of their real estate portfolio. Not by choice, not by their fault. It's just a market-driven, you know, collapse of the real estate market, and it impacted everybody. But, you know, for us at Keyworth, it allowed us to really be selective and go out and find some great opportunities in the market and lend money when other banks may have been pulling back.
So you were basically the only lender out there that was you know, doing loans for certain types of industry at the time when everyone else just there was no money to be had.
Well, it was tight, and not everybody was in that situation. There were some other banks that were still lending, but it definitely allowed us to kind of get out there in the forefront and look for great opportunities when other banks, quite frankly, just couldn't lend at that time.
Are you kind of a niche or industry focus?
Well, we look for small to mid-sized businesses, and these can be companies with revenues anywhere from $250,000 all the way up to $20, $30 million. It just really depends on the industry. But, you know, at Keyworth, a lot of us have a background in lending to the medical and dental industry. It's been one that we've had a lot of success in. If you can get in with a good medical practice or a good dental office, I mean, you can get a wide range of referrals in this industry, and it's just really been a great source for us. And as you know, that it's been relatively safe type of lending. So, mm-hmm. and we've done very well with that.
I've got a question, Mike, and you asked Jim about, you know, screening his tenants and how do you know if it's a good tenant. For you, you've got a lot at stake here because you're lending sometimes a lot of money to these companies. How do you screen a company so you know you're making lending money to the right people?
Well, it's a fine line, and we look at a consultative approach. Is when we bring a borrower in, we really want to get to know that individual because it's not just looking at the financials. You really want to understand their background, where are they from, how have they gotten to where they are today, but at the end of the day, it does come down to the financial performance and how you mitigate potential risk within that loan. So.
I've gotten to know some people at Keyworth Bank, you know, Wanda Wieger, who's mm-hmm. there in the branch with you, wonderful lady. And there's that personal experience as well that sometimes you don't get with the bigger banks. I would think for a company that's looking that, you know, that might be intimidated by the bigger banks or the bigger banks won't even give them the time of day. You're more, for a small or mid-sized business, you're more personable that you're, hey, you know, everything might not be perfect. The ducks may not be in a row, but we know who you are. You're part of the community just like we are, that you have a little more leeway than maybe the stiffier stuff of your banks, if you will.
Well, it's
is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. It's grassroots community banking where you can come in and you go in and see a fresh, smiling face like a Wanda who knows you by name, and it feels like home. I mean, I think that's what the market wants. They want to be able to come into a bank where they feel like home. So you come into our offices and it's different feel than most banks that you go into because we're offering you coffee, drinks, you know, snacks. We've got a fireplace. You can sit down and read the paper. And all of our associates are so personable, know everybody by name. And when you can come into a place, especially a bank, and it feels like home, what does that tell you? You're in a safe place.
Well, speaking of home and banks, and actually, Keyworth lent me my money on my construction loan for my brand new house that we financed out of in December, moved in December. And you guys were one of the only games in town doing construction financing for an individual. You know, we went to a couple other places and no one was doing it. And I can back you up on that in terms of that home feel. Whenever I had to come in to make my payments or talk to Jeff Button, who was my loan officer, it was very much that way. What does someone need to do to prepare for a loan request, a business owner?
Well, what we look at is if we're looking at a business, owner-managed business, we're looking at about 3 to 4 years' worth of financial statements and tax returns, and as well as a personal financial statement. But more so than that, I mean, we're going to need the financials, but we'd like to see that somebody has not necessarily a complete business plan that you would have done years ago when you started the business, but have enough information to be able to really get into the history of your company. Allow me to ask questions, to give you the consultation that you need to. And if it's not an opportunity that's a fit for right then, you know, my job is to get you prepared to be there. And so if it's another year, if it's another 2 years when you're ready to get that loan, it's my job to help you get there and to keep in touch with you. And so in 2 years, you can come back when it's time to get that loan.
I enjoyed Jim when he talked about that person that, you know, came out and thanked him, and he talked about loving his job. He's having a great time doing it. What do you enjoy? What's the most enjoyable aspect about what you do, Mike?
You know, I think about that a lot, and what drives me every day, and it's really is helping people. When you can go in and give a loan to somebody that you're helping them realize their dreams, I mean, that is what at the end of the day this is all about. I mean, we are out there helping people in the community grow their businesses and be successful. And when, for me, it's developing those relationships. We're a very relationship-driven bank. So when I bring in a client, I want them to be with me for life. I mean, that's what it's all about. And if you can help them be successful, then you can be their friend for life. So they're not just my clients, they're my friends. And so that's really what drives me.
Where did you come from, Mike? Or give us a little your background.
My background is I got into banking. I graduated from Georgia Southern in 1991 and got into banking on the retail side with one of the larger banks and stayed in the retail side and did my time there for 6 or 7 years mm-hmm. with the larger banks, but got a lot of wonderful training. And through that time, it seems like I migrated to smaller banks. And in 1998, got into business banking, and that's when really things took off for me. And I said, this is what I love doing. This is where I can make a difference in my community. And I hooked on with a great guy who is our executive at Keyworth named Neil Stevens, who has been a friend of mine and my mentor for the last, you know, 15 years we've worked together. And, you know, and he's a part of Keyworth, and I work with him at another bank. And once I got through a couple of years worth of business banking, that's when I started going into commercial and looking at the larger deals and things like that. And it's taken off from there.
How has technology changed in banking, you know, through your 22 years, you know, and more recently?
It's amazing. I remember days when I actually had to put a loan note in a typewriter and type it out. I mean, I know I'm dating myself here, but today, you know, you think many times when I worked for the larger banks, and my selling point against some of my competitors out there was that, you know, larger banks has a branch on every corner. Well, today, as a community bank, we don't need to have a location on every corner. We want you to come in and see us. We'd love for you to come in and see us, but we'll come to you. Not only that, we have technology like remote deposit capture, where you can make your deposits right there at your office. You'll scan your checks and submit your deposits all the way up until 5 o'clock that evening. And so, I mean, that is a tremendous convenience. And so we have all the online tools that you would want. Bill pay, I mean, there's just so many things today that you can do technology-wise where, as a community bank that only has 4 locations, that we can have a far-reaching impact on the community and our customers.
And so you're saying that basically the difference between the big banks and the small banks, other than deposits, the difference is really in services are becoming smaller and smaller and smaller.
Absolutely. We're definitely closing that gap every day.
How much longer do you see that going on? When do you see, you know, that kind of merging? Obviously, with everyone talking about too big to fail and, you know, the bigger banks out there, that these bigger banks, you know, may have to go smaller, and the smaller banks are much more set up to be more successful.
I'm sure Mike's hoping the big banks never wake up and figure it out.
My greatest source of clients. So, but no, I think that the whole and what the industry has gone through is definitely changed the regulatory environment for what we do. And any applicant will tell you today that you need a lot more information than you used to. And, you know, and it's we all have to kind of share in that blame, because when times were good and lending was great and market values were going up, everybody was lending money, it was easy, and it might cause you to maybe cut a few corners here and there. Not that I've ever done that, of course, but But you know, so as you go through these things, and some of these larger banks that you never thought would fail closed up, I mean, it really does make you sit back and reassess, what have I done as a lender over the last 22 years to possibly contribute to that, and what can I do to improve? So I think you learn from it, and you don't make the same mistakes again.
What's with the real estate market, what's changed? You know, obviously the last 5 years we had the downturn. Let's say in the last year or two, is there been already a loosening, or do you sense a change that's going on?
Oh, there's no question. We have seen the market come back for commercial mortgage lending that was dead a couple of years ago. So I think with the real estate prices resetting as they have over the last few years, I think, you know, we've seen them get pretty low. And what that has helped is lenders to come in and lend money, and investors, borrowers, to be able to lease these buildings out that may have been vacant before at much lower rates, and it makes more sense. And so without question, we have seen that market come back. Life companies, commercial mortgage-backed securities are starting to lend again. Inventory for land out there, you don't see as much pipe farms. You are starting to see some vertical construction going on, and that's encouraging with the market. And so it's all about the consumer confidence. And the more we see of that, I think it will continue to grow.
Mike, let's say I have a business and I'm thinking about getting a loan to expand my business, or Jim walks through your doors with Uncommon Properties. What would your advice be to us? What are you looking for? What do you want to see from us? What ducks do we need to have in a row so we have a good chance of getting the loan that we're requesting?
You know, it's as far as the application process, it really is about having good financial data. One thing that I look for as an account officer is the knowledge and expertise of that business owner. Does he know the information that he is presenting to me? If he doesn't quite know it, then I'm there to help. He doesn't always have to know it, but he's got a CPA or somebody that is a consultant to him on those numbers. So the more that you can know about your business, what makes it work, how does the cash flow cycle work, you know, be able to explain what your margins mean. Be able to say, all right, my margins shrank last year, but here's why. You know, because I'm going to have questions. I've got to present that to my people. I've got to do a risk assessment myself. And if you can answer those questions for me, it helps me present that credit to my loan committee in the right way.
Is it all black and white, or is there sometimes a gray area where sometimes you go with your gut? You got to go with your gut feeling.
Oh, there's no question. Really? I mean, we look at one of the number one the five C's of credit is character, and so and a lot of times you can tell just by talking with somebody in 15 minutes. So without a doubt, there's never a black and white you know, loan that comes in that you just have to key it in and see if it scores out. I mean, when what we do in community banking, we're really looking to see, all right, where can we make a difference? Where you might have an area over here that doesn't look so great, but why did it happen? Explain it and then move forward. So without question, my job as an account officer is to get through the gray area, without a doubt.
I don't have another question, but I'm thinking of the Jim Carrey movie where he's a loan officer and he's approving everybody that walks in the door, and his boss says, you need to come here, and he thinks he's in a lot of trouble, and turns out the bank is doing great because people that never got loans before are getting loans. And I think it might have been Fun with Dick and Jane or something, but it was hilarious, and I'm thinking about that right now.
No, because I think that was a Liar Liar, actually.
Liar Liar, thank you very much. But it makes me think about that, because a lot of it is, as you say, it's black and white, but a lot of it is just character and just your gut, because the person walking in, they've never been given that chance to show what they can do, and you're, yeah, as you said, why you love your job, you're giving people an opportunity.
Without a doubt. I mean, I wish I could find that stamp and just stamp them. I wish it were that easy. Not anymore. Big Brother is looking over our shoulder and definitely make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect the bank and the shareholders and our depositors.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming out today.
Thank you.
And for people who want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
I work out of the Duluth office right here at 6515 Sugarloaf Parkway, but my office line is 770-753-2332, and they also can reach me via email at Mike Fulton at KeyworthBank.com.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming in. Jim, thanks for coming on up. Mike, thank you for helping me out again today.
Oh, it was fun. I mean, to learn about Jim's business is very educational and really cool to learn.
Thank you.
And having a little fun there with the loan thing, I want to give you the stamp and go just approve, approve, approved. But we don't want to put you. We don't want to put Keyworth at a bank.
Exactly. I do think the government would have some issues with that currently.
They would, absolutely.
That's Hollywood, folks. It's not real life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Well, guys out there, remember you can always listen to this show and every show on Business Radio X under the Gwinnett Business Radio link, and it will be on my website at atlantagaattorneys.com. Of course, you can give me a call at my office for 770-291-2009. Again, Ernst & Partners, I handle real estate closings, bankruptcy, and personal injury, and I have an associate, Drew, that handles criminal and divorce. I look forward to talking to you guys in the future.